I'm John.
And I'm Ash.
And this is Your Damn Right, where we talk about the week in TV. Guys, please like, comment, share, subscribe to us. We're on Podomatic. We're on iTunes. We post regularly on Facebook, on our own pages, as well as a host of Orphan Black-related group pages and some other pages. So if you're here, thank you for joining us. We're going to switch the order up a little bit this week. In the past, we started with Empire. This week, we're going to start with How to Get Away with Murder. And in How to Get Away with Murder, we met Bonnie in the episode Meet Bonnie. So, Ash, what'd you think?
I liked it. I like that, one, the story's unraveling more and more. I like that we finally got some, you know, backstory on Bonnie for once. Yeah, I really like that. I like the reveal of of Asher and Bonnie being at the, it's like everybody and their mama is at this
fucking, I know. It's like they had a big damn reunion or something, like a party at the murder scene. If the prosecutor wasn't dead already, she wouldn't know what to do. She'd just throw everybody in jail.
You're right.
Avoiding the closing scene where you talked about where Asher goes, I don't know if you mentioned Asher goes to make the statement. I do think the most significant thing is that we finally understand some of Bonnie's background and maybe even what Annalise saved her from. We talked about that earlier in the year. And that informs a lot of Bonnie's behavior, the whole like abused dog thing. It makes a lot more sense, you know, that she was like abused, especially like sexually abused as a child, and again, Annalise saved her from that, but maybe she's never got out of the mindset of being a victim. A lot of my notes this week were on the text and not the structure or the visual storytelling. It was like for the first 40 minutes, it was really like a simple, straightforward story, and then the last 20 minutes got really interesting. There were some, this is what I want to ask you about. Why do you think the show, like, that's not irregular with How to Get Away with Murder. Why do you feel the show waits until, like, the last third or quarter of episodes to be innovative? It almost becomes a different show. It's a much more cinematic, innovative experience. Like, the beginning of episodes or the first half of episodes are often like watching a procedural, and then the end of episodes are like watching a genre suspense film. Like, it's like you go from watching something on CBS to watching, you know, like a Bryan Singer movie. I don't know. It's
I noticed that too. I don't know. I think because there's two different, or at least two major stories, you know, especially at this point that's going on. So I guess it kind of is like two different shows in a sense, kind of like just put together.
Yeah.
That's probably why it's like that.
I think it's blended well. We're going to talk in a little bit about American Horror Story and how they are blending that and if they are doing a good job. I think they do a good job blending the stories here. I'm not complaining about it because it works, obviously. I always praise how well executed and well made How to Get Away with Murder is. I just find it odd that I think what I particularly enjoy, and I think what most of the audience particularly enjoys, is the later stages of each episode where we get like the scenes that are like interspersed with each other and the building tension and the building suspense. And I just wonder why they don't try to go for it. Like, it's a really good show. If the last 15 minutes of each episode were how the entire episode was made, I think we would be talking about this show the way we talk about Breaking Bad or something. And I don't understand. I understand the impulse to keep it structured, maybe grounded, but I don't know that I understand why they don't ever just go for the fences and see what would happen if they made an entire, like, crazy episode with cut interspersed scenes and building tension and flashbacks. I don't know.
I think with this show in particular is because this still is, you know, a show about lawyers and the students. So, like, they still have that job and have to deal with cases
I
and stuff like
guess.
that.
I mean, we don't. We really
That's what I
care about
thought.
that. Like, they're a lot. They're it's how to get away with a murder. It's not like how to be a trial lawyer. I
Yeah, but that's still what you can't just drop that from the show because it
What
was
if
like a
Bonnie
non.
gets to what if Annalise gets disbarred for her unethical practices? Then could we drop it?
I'm sure she'll find a way to get her damn job back. So
I
I you
mean,
know.
she's getting close. Like, the judge is
Yeah.
apparently going to investigate how she's coming up with all this fucking evidence that she shouldn't have. So, I mean.
Yeah, that means Springfield has to keep a low profile for a little bit.
Which Oscar did, and Oscar just wants to get paid, damn it. Poor Oscar. I don't blame the guy. Like, he's working 20 hours a week. He just wants a little side check. Damn it,
It's like break me off a little something, you know?
He mentions it like three times in a row, to where it's like the first time it's like, oh, he could
Yeah.
be joking. Oh, he's not joking. Like, he wants the
He needs this money because, like,
money. He's
doing all
got
this
rent to
illegal
pay.
work.
Okay, that AIDS pill got expensive. All right.
But I'll be afraid if he ever met Annalise. He's already scared of her, which we already, and they never even met, so
He
I'm.
should be. He should be. Because everybody who is in Annalise's circle, and it's not really Annalise's fault, I don't believe. It's as much their fault as it's
Not all the
hers.
time. Sometimes she creates
Well, I
the
mean, it's partially her fault, but I mean, it's as much their fault as it is hers to me.
Yeah,
But everybody in her circle, including Asher now, is involved in, conspiracy and in crime, basically. So, like, even Asher has been sucked into the. Can we talk about how good of an actress Bonnie, and not Liza Well, who's a good actress in her own right, who plays Bonnie, but the character of Bonnie is apparently one hell of an actress. Like, she was crying on cue, like, pretty
yeah.
hardcore, and she had
Like,
all
oh
these
shit.
details.
Yeah, she was good. I was like, oh shit, she's like really going for it. Like, Annalise, you can't be mad at this shit. Like, she.
See,
I was like, Annalise.
Annalise, it's oh, she can do something. I mean, I think what's really informative about the later scene where Annalise shows Asher the video of Bonnie is that
Yeah.
maybe Bonnie killed her father, and like you remember Bonnie's details about what happened is basically that he was holding her close and he was going to rape her and he was being sexually
Yeah.
aggressive and like so she had to kill him. And the way she was crying and how real it seemed,
Yeah, I think that's what it was too.
I'm guessing that that's probably what happened, except it didn't happen with Sam, it happened with her father, and that's how Annalise saved her. Annalise helped cover up the murder of Bonnie's father, or
And
the
I also
killing.
thought about in the premiere when she was talking to Rebecca and about how, you know, the way they grew up and like we're not good people.
Yeah.
And I was wondering like what has Bonnie done to not to be view herself as not a good person. So
And Bonnie's view of herself probably isn't accurate because, like we talked about, she views herself as a victim. She has some self-esteem issues, and
yeah.
even it was not her fault that Asher was going to go to the cops, but she blamed herself, and she's like, just put the murder on me, Annalise. Good God, Bonnie. I want to overcomplicate something for the prosecutor for a moment, because the prosecutor tells Asher there are that you're either Annalise or you're one of the good guys, and I'm like, did she used to write comics in the 60s or like write for WWF in the 80s? Like, I've never heard a more simple worldview espoused by like a character on a complex TV show than that. Like, you're either a good guy or you're like a murdering, conniving liar. There's no in
Yeah.
between.
Yeah, that's crazy. I don't know who's worse, her or the DA from the prosecutor from Empire. Thank God she wasn't here
Well,
this
at
week.
least the prosecutor from Empire is gone, apparently.
Yeah,
Thanks
for
to
now.
Thirsty. Maybe Annalise just needs to hire Thirsty on her team for
Oh gosh.
a
Well,
while.
like I said, she got pranked.
Two more things I want to ask you about. One, can we talk about Frank's weird sexual standards? He wouldn't sleep with Laurel a couple of weeks ago because she supposedly just wanted him for his body, but he was ready to get it on with her now, even though she was having some kind of, like, mental collapse.
Yeah, I don't know. What the fuck is going... I really don't understand those two. Like, what the fuck is wrong with
that? Either. Like, I try to offer insight. I don't have a lot for Laurel and Frank. I get why they're attracted to each other. They're both fairly attractive people, and, like, Laurel's a younger, like, played hard to get. Frank's dangerous. And all. What I don't understand is their dynamic, though. And it's not...
Yeah.
And my problem with that isn't... It's not like the, like, Wes and Elise dynamic that I don't understand, but I'm intrigued by.
Yeah.
We've seen all of their interactions. It just doesn't make any damn sense. Speaking of the Wes and Elise dynamic, I thought it was a really interesting scene where she sat down with him and she said, how, I forget exactly how she phrased it, I didn't write it down. She was like, how are you with our relationship? And that's like a really weird thing to ask somebody. I don't know if I've ever asked anybody that I'm not dating that.
Yeah, I know that too. I was like,
I might have asked my girlfriend that at some point, but nobody else.
It is a weird thing to just ask. It's like,
I've definitely never asked like a student or a teacher that. How is that related?
Well, even your friend is like, that's something you ask. So it's like, what?
it's so interesting. So, do you think the show suffers? All right, the most interesting relationships, I think we agree, are Annalise West, Annalise Bonnie, and Annalise Fomke. Does the show suffer at all when Annalise's, like, bizarre personal relationships are not the focus of an episode?
Not really. I actually kind of wish they branch out Annalise's relationships with the other students, because I'm curious, because it's always focused on Wes, but we get bits and pieces. Like, last week we had Connor. I think he was last week or the week before that, we had her with Michaela and her fact that she can't use her boobs correctly. It's like, and then we had Annalise and, what's his face? This week.
Nate?
So, no, this other student.
Asher? Connor?
I want to call him.
She interacted with both Asher more this week. Connor was like the big debate she had with him last week.
Yeah.
I thought Viola Davis's like performance in her little outburst, where she revealed the truth about Bonnie, it was like a mic drop too. I thought it was a really good, I thought it was a really good showing by her. She's always fantastic, but also by the character of Annalise. Like, it settled that debate with Connor in a way that had like a lot of finality to it. There's no way he could really argue that they weren't trying to help him. Now that Bonnie put herself on the hook for murder.
Yeah, I love how Annalise said it was like, they're always questioning her and everything. Like, she's going to, like, screw us over, or she's doing this. And then, like, she said it, like, this week, like, I'm always trying to help. I do this shit because I'm saving you guys. Do you not understand that? Because why wouldn't she? Because if they go down... She goes down.
Yeah. I would equate it to this, and we need to get to favorite scenes in a second, but I want to equate it to this for a second. It's like if you're in a relationship with somebody, and this is how it feels to me, and like they cheated on whoever they were with last with you, and so you like never quite trust them because you've seen them screw other people over, even though it was for you. So they're always questioning Annalise because, she's screwing over other people, but she's doing it for them, but they're still seeing her screw people over. And I was really happy that Annalise finally seemed concerned about Bonnie's well-being at some point this week. She did not want Bonnie to die.
Thank you.
That was good.
Like, I loved it. I was like, thank you. Someone is appreciating Bonnie, okay? Because she was like, there's no reason... about hating Bonnie, this I was like, oh, damn it, Annalise, just appreciate what she did. She just saved your ass again.
Again.
I just need people to start apologizing to Bonnie.
I think that's a different show entirely. Do you have a favorite scene from Meet Bonnie?
I would say the reveal of the video of Bonnie, but I'm going to go a more fun route because that's disturbing.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with the foursome, the orgy discussion.
Wait. You told me 2 weeks ago a foursome was not an orgy. It needed five.
I take the foursome.
Okay.
Well, no, they were trying to invite other people. So
yeah. Well, I mean, they know my only problem with that scene is like they have the like secret sex club connections now. Like, why weren't they calling those people up?
Right.
Yeah.
Something out, you know?
Yeah, it was a fun scene. My favorite scene was one I mentioned earlier. It was like the interspersed scenes almost between it happened in like a montage together between the gang confronting Wes and Eggs and Annalise apologizing to Nate. I think they all built great suspense at the episode's climax. And also, I liked how it tied the minor storylines in. Like, Michaela was so fucking furious. She was like, and rightfully so, and like threatening to like cut people's like testicles off and stuff, and that like wasn't really addressed thoroughly, but it was tied into what with the bigger storyline that was going on, and I appreciated it. It was, and it also set up, you know, future storylines. So I thought it was really well done.
I find it interesting that everyone's kind of like turning against Wes at this. Like before, you know, it was like because of the Rebecca thing, but everybody's just like so fed up with this Rebecca thing. It's like, Wes, can you, like, you're dragging us into this shit. Like, just get over it because you're fucking up our lives as well with it.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. The puppy is a snake. So,
yeah,
from How to Get Away with Murder, we will check into Scream Queens and American Horror Story. All right, so this week, Scream Queens and American Horror Story existed side by side. 7 Minutes in Hell was the name of Scream Queens episode, and Mommy was American Horror Stories. And I thought this week was a pretty good indication of how they're different and what they want to do differently. Sometimes one's executed better than the other. But Scream Queens will have the week off next week, so we'll devote this entire time to it, to American Horror Story. So let's talk just a little about 7 Minutes in Hell. Ash, Chanel is super gross rich, okay? She is super gross rich. You understand that?
Apparently. That's like Chad's favorite thing about her, though.
It's my favorite thing. My favorite thing about her is how it's her favorite thing about herself.
Yeah.
You know, well, I mean, the shit she says, like there's, I learned a few things from watching A&E documentaries about the mafia.
Yeah.
And then when she was, like, talking about it being mic'd up, she's like, so whoever might be listening, I present to you Zayday something. I didn't even know Zayday's last name. Okay, other than Chanel, aren't all of these girls, like, way too calm about living in the midst of a serial killer?
Yes. Like, what? Like, who would want to stick around in this shit? Fuck this sisterhood shit. I'm going home.
I know. Like, what could possess you to stay? I don't understand. I just do not. I understand they need to stay for the sake of the story, but if we try to, like, put these people into, like, even semi-real characters, like, semi-real people, like, they gotta be trying to get the fuck away. Even super rich, super gross rich Chanel would, like, want to be super gross rich at home, not around the serial killer.
Yeah, this show is just like...
They don't have an internal logic. Like, people are dying all around me. Should I leave? Nah. Should I call the police? Nah. Let's play spin the bottle.
Where was Denise this episode? Shouldn't she been there?
Denise, like, this was the first episode without Denise Hempfield. Did you miss her?
Yeah, I did. Even though Chad did bring her up because, you know, he fucked me.
Yeah. he
knew what she was doing.
Like, Chad, we talked about this as a group, and we feel like you're mugging too many old people, dude. That's a weird conversation to have in the group. Like, get all your friends together. Like, do we think our one friend is having sex with too many old people? Let's talk about that for a minute.
Let him live his life, damn it.
I mean, as Chad himself said, like, way back in episode, I think it was like one or two, he pointed out that it was pathological to tell a man to have
Yeah.
sex with less women. It's pathological. And now his own brothers are doing it too. Chad is the real victim here. Forget all these murder people.
Apparently.
So I did miss Niecy Nash. I thought Billie Lourd was a great surprise this season and this episode in particular. Her spin the bottle scene and her like love for predatory Les and her like little monologue about the ear fetish. That was all just amazing. It was the best. I want so much more of that from her. She's great.
I really, because I like the kind of, I couldn't really figure her character out, and I just realized this episode, like, she just pretty much just void of emotion. So that was like, okay, this makes a lot more sense
It's nobody.
about
She
the
has
character.
the charisma, the Charles Manson charisma. Okay,
Yeah.
nobody English.
Like, what?
I just,
But yeah, her and Predatory Les, it was just so
oh,
funny.
and then
It
she
was.
felt kind of bad about making Predatory Les go get murdered, and I love that Predatory
Yeah.
Les was just like, okay, I'll go get murdered if you say so.
I love how Chanel was like about Predatory Les. She's like, I mean, she's cute, you know, and Bruce Lee was a DJ or something like that. I
Yeah,
was like,
I like how Chanel kept going on about the Dickies. Like, we can't play spin the bottle without the Dickies. We need the Dickies.
And no one was paying attention to her. I was like, she has a point.
Chad is super passionate about Truth or Dare, by the way. Like, that dude gets
Oh
into
yeah.
Truth or
I was like, it's not that serious. It's like, dude.
I enjoyed this episode for what it was. I thought this episode was more tonally intact than others because at no point did I feel like it
Yeah.
was trying to, like, I felt like this was a pure excess in like parody and satire, and at no point was it trying to be scary in its own right, or it didn't focus too
Yeah.
much on the Red Devil. And it really, I mean, I think even though I love Niecy Nash, love her in this, I think the show's at its best when it's actually focusing on Chanel and the girls in Kappa House.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah,
Yeah.
the focus on them. This episode was definitely better than so a lot of the others.
Yeah. So I have one question about Chanel number three, Billie Lourd. She says her father's Charles Manson, but in another scene she says her father's like really rich. Is Charles Manson
Yeah.
rich? Like, I don't think that's right. That doesn't sound right. How is, what is he was poor and then he murdered some people. How did he get rich?
I'm assuming it's like it's an adopted father or stepfather. So Charles Manson is not her fucking father. First of all, like, we
Okay,
need to
how do you
like
know?
know
How do you
when.
know?
Wait, when did Charles Manson die?
He's not
I thought.
dead.
Well, not dead, but I'm pretty sure like
When did he go to prison? Is that what you
yeah.
Okay, let me I'm going this is the magic of, you know, of listening to our
Google.
podcast. We're just gonna Google some shit on in the middle. Charles Manson, let's see, 1969. Okay, 1971 he was found guilty.
Unless, I mean, I'm sure he's probably conjugal visits, but
Maybe he might get conjugal. I don't know.
I don't know.
I love
Like,
that his Wikipedia page has the genres of his musical career listed. Come on now. Way to be fair and balanced. Do you have a favorite? I mean, there's not a lot to say about this episode. I think it was at its best, like I said, because of what it focused on. I think it was tonally structured well because it was structured as a comedy. Did you have a favorite scene?
yeah. I'll say favorite scene was I'll give it the spin the bottle scene because it
Yeah,
was
it was
just
great. Okay.
yeah, it was just ridiculously funny.
Because I already talked about it, I'll go with that scene. I'll go with another one. I'll go with when I realized Chanel number five was like the Bonnie slash Anika of Scream Queens. Like, she gets shit all over and just keeps coming back. Like, that's who Chanel number five. There's one on every show, apparently. My least favorite scene was when Chad decided to rip off Ric Flair and start talking about Space Mountain. Okay, Ric Flair's dick is Space Mountain. Google it, kids. It's true.
Yes, children, Google that.
Children, you should not be listening to us. We are mature audiences. Speaking of mature audiences, Mommy was definitely, as usual, for AHS, for mature audiences. What did you think of Mommy?
I liked it. It gave a lot more insight into the characters. It definitely explained the the mother and son dynamic much more. Angela Bassett finally arrived. Thank you.
And I'm happy to see her. I don't know if I'm happy to see that character. Like, it's almost like Predatory Les, the serious version.
The serious version.
Yeah, the non-funny Predatory Les.
I'm curious where this is going. Because I like the backstory. Although the random, rapper poet guy. Like, okay,
I thought that was ridiculous. I'm sorry. I thought the rapper...
Yeah,
I honestly didn't know. That was my lowest point of the episode, because I didn't know if that was supposed to be comedy. It almost felt like Scream Queens for a moment. And I was like, this is confusing as hell. Because I didn't know if I was supposed to laugh at the fact that there was some, like, poet rapper who was like Tupac living in the Hotel Cortez in the 90s. It was definitely a ridiculous revenge story, though, that she, like, waited 20 years to kidnap Homeboy.
Yeah, I was like, why get him now? We know he left the hotel before. Why you wait till after he gets dumped to snatch him up? She's moved on already.
Yeah, Angela Bassett, not the best at the whole revenge thing. I thought the episode felt really disjointed early on. I think it's I think it's like three different things. It's a really interesting film about a woman who lost her son, and I think if the entire show was about the family relationship after losing the son, and like they're seeing the son at this hotel, and like we didn't get all this other backstory about James March and about the vampire, like I think I would be super into that. It's a really weird murder ghost film. Vampire film going on in the hotel. And then another tonally and stylistically different thing going on with the Ten Commandments murder. How do you think they're doing it, trying to blend these three stories together? Because they're three different stories.
Yeah, they definitely are. I have to say, I do kind of wish I didn't think about it before. I was like, oh, no, because I don't care. But I was like, you know what? This episode made me wish the family was forefront, the main thing.
Yeah.
Because it kind of felt like it hasn't been. And if that was because you need people to actually care about.
Exactly.
I didn't really care about that story until this episode with the mother and her backstory. So yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely feel like she's the most interesting character at this point to me. Just because, I mean, maybe not the most fascinating, because I'm sure there's lots to be told about Lady Gaga's character, but
the disco queen.
Yeah, the disco queen. But I can't pronounce her name right. I'm gonna butcher it. It's like Chloe Savini.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, I think she's doing a great job. She was played on Big Love for several years. Like, she's a really good actress. I think she's doing a good job here. Let's see. As far as this episode goes, it was entitled Mommy, and it focused on the relationship between mothers and children. What do you think it had to say on the issue of, maternal bond? Could you discern a clear communication between the show and, did it have a message at all?
I don't know. I think, between these two mothers, one thing, we can absolutely say that these two mothers absolutely love their children, especially the one they lost.
Right.
That's certain.
Yeah, they seem to love them more after they lost them. That's one thing you could say. And it seems to effectively communicate mothers love you, but they're also terrible.
It's like, oh wow, okay.
It's also like, think about the mother with the kid who has polio. Not polio, is it polio? No,
oh gosh,
measles.
Measles,
yeah.
Oh my god, I wanted to slap her. She was like, why didn't you call me when, you know, his temperature got over like 103? She was like, because I felt bad about what you said to me. I was like, bitch, your son has a temperature over 103. Stop worrying about your fucking feelings and get his ass to a fucking hospital.
Yeah, I mean, obviously. I want to say I still find Sally to be the most, I still find Sally to be the most mesmerizing character. When Sally is on screen,
yeah.
I like, can't help but pay attention.
I
don't believe she's the Ten Commandments killer, but she certainly knows who, I think she knows who it is.
Yeah.
Like, she seems to know a little bit about everything that's going on around there. Sally's got her hand in everything.
I guess when you're stuck in that hotel, you gotta know everything. But yeah, she definitely seems to know everything that's going on.
Let me ask you about one filming decision. When Sally was in the elevator with Detective Lowe, they were like these flashes of light that kept coming in and out.
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck was it? Was that trying to convey, like, he was having a delusion? Or is she a ghost? What, is Sally possibly a ghost like James Patrick March is a ghost?
I think Sally's part most likely, like, not a ghost, but she's definitely...
She's
you
either
know,
a ghost or a vampire. I mean, it's really our two options.
Right. Yeah.
Because she got pushed out a window. She's definitely dead.
Yeah, she died. But, I don't think she's a vampire. I don't know, because she, Gaga changed, well, the Countess, changed Matt Boomer's character, but... I don't know if he changed. She changed her as well.
I don't think
so
she did.
She
remember she asked Kathy Bates, like, when she was going to OD her and then couldn't.
Yeah.
Like, Kathy Bates apparently has, like, the the stature of a fucking horse. But she's like, you don't have any unfinished business here. You're not going to haunt these halls or something. If you think about the fact that James March is apparently a ghost who's still around and... I remember The Shining. There is a ghost in The Shining, and the ghost mostly communicates with the guy with Jack Nicholson's character, who's like staying in the hotel and is like fighting his alcoholism. That seems to me to be an indicator that maybe Sally is a ghost, and her interactions with Detective Lowe are supposed to remind us of that.
I'm thinking that as well. There's definitely a comparison with you know The Shining and everything. So. Yeah, I'm thinking I'm going to go with ghosts.
Yeah. I mean, I guess that's why there were all these weird flashes of light to try to tell us something. It was a really weird scene. Not disturbing in the typical American Horror Story way. Like, it was just like, wait, what am I watching?
Yeah, I was like, what the fuck is going on? And then that drill dicker, drill
fucker. He showed up for a second. Thank God he did not attack anybody without lube, because Ash could not handle that rudeness.
Yeah, that's disrespectful.
All right, before we get to the favorite scene, do you have anything else on Mommy?
About the Angela Bassett character, I did wonder, it's like, the Countess seemed to probably, you know, obviously she switches out partners and everything, but I found it interesting with Angela Bassett's character, why she never cut her loose until... Angela Bassett's character betrayed her.
Yeah.
So, and they was together for decades. With Matt Boomer's character, she just found a new piece, you know, and just went on with
bye,
that.
Boo-boo
so
kitty.
Wanna... Yeah, that's pretty much happened. So I think that's gonna add much more to the dynamic. Like, why did she keep her around for so long like that?
I think that will be explored. I'm going to need to care for some reason about the Countess or about Angela Bassett's... I don't even know Angela Bassett's character's name right now. I'm going to have to, like, have some reason to care about them before I care about their relationship. But, yeah. I mean, I definitely think you're right that that's something that's going to come back up and be explored. Do you have a favorite scene in specific?
I had to go with the first... I don't know Angela Bassett's character's name, but the flashback, because I really thought someone changed the channel on me when I watched it. I was like, what the fuck is Pam Grier doing on my TV? I didn't turn to Foxy Brown. I was like, oh.
Yeah.
That was like
That's exactly what that reminded me of, too, Foxy Brown.
I was like, oh, that's not Cambridge. I was confused. But yeah, because I had to really pause and like last for like 10 minutes because it caught me on guard, and I had to laugh.
I miss Angela Bassett's ridiculous accent from Coven. That's what I miss.
Oh yeah, and also she doesn't age much. I think she's a real life vampire. I'm just gonna put that out there.
Her and the chick from Buffy and Pretty Little Liars and what's her name? Like the girl
oh,
who always
Bianca Lawson. Yeah,
Bianca Lawson,
you don't
that's
age
her.
at all.
Bianca Lawson's looked the same for like 20 years.
She looks younger now.
Yeah. My favorite scene is probably Kathy Bates and her son. They're seeing. I mean, it's sort of a tie between
yeah.
both scenes. That was certainly the most affecting things that happened. I think probably the scene where he finds her and tries to restore her to life, and like there's
Yeah.
a realization there at some point that you see him having that, you know, I know this woman was fucked up, but she is my mother. Also, their
Yeah.
fight scene though, because that really.
Yeah,
That
that was a
was
good
like,
scene.
yeah, on a show that struggles to like have humanistic characters at times, we've talked about,
Yeah.
like, she mentions that they were in a vegetarian cult. Like, little shit like that, like, is really good to me. Like, it's
Yeah.
it adds a sympathetic, almost human light to the characters, and it's a really human moment on a show that needs more of them. We will talk about this in more detail next week, not vegetarian cults, but, American Horror Story take a full segment for us. We're gonna go ahead and get to Empire. Well, Empire took us to church this week. That was certainly part of the procedure. Be True was a transitional episode, in my opinion. Like, all the entire season has sort of been built around Lucius having all these criminal things hanging over his head, criminal charges hanging over his head, and his
Yeah.
time in jail, and the war between himself and Cookie. And, you know, I don't know. I felt like a lot of the Cookie stuff took a him. The battle between him and Cookie took a back seat, and Andre's major storyline also seemed to end, and he got a new one this week. And it's just like a lot of movement was happening. That it's almost like it was almost like the start of a new season. Like the writers had to reset.
Yeah, it's like it's definitely a shift in the middle of the season kind of thing. But I didn't mind it. I'm glad that Andre,
No, I mean, it
got
needed
some
to
focus.
happen. I don't think they should have stretched the
Yeah, I'm glad
Lucius.
they didn't stretch it. Yeah,
Yeah.
but yeah, like I said, I'm glad that Andre got some good focus and story. And it's Lucius. I'm glad he got some more backstory. I have to say those are probably like my favorite things in a
Yeah.
sense this season is Lucius' backstory.
Yeah, Lucius's backstory has been one of the highlights of the season for me too. I think the most significant thing that happened, though, of course, is the fact that, okay. First of all, let's say that let's address the fact that Lucius apparently hired, I don't know, some like C-rate thugs to steal some tapes from Cookie. I'm sure these were Thirsty's hires. These were not the world. This is not world class crooks. But they got thwarted off by like by Cookie with a gun. Yeah. But I feel like it's significant to know that I don't think that Hakeem's kidnappers had anything to do with Lucius. I think that's a external force, and I think likely that that's some sort of outside threat that could motor that could be like the engine for the narrative that the season needs, like a primary conflict after so much was resolved. I think maybe like them banding together as a family to try to, yeah, I think that could be what
family has to work together now
yeah.
because family's in trouble. Yeah, I think it's the people who stole what's her name, Tatiana, purse.
Yeah.
Yes, I think it's them. Yeah, definitely. But the thing about Tiana, that's her name, Tiana, right?
I don't know.
The thing that kills me, I was like, why did she fucking bring that fancy ass purse in that fucking neighborhood and just think that was
I
okay.
mean,
Like,
she had it coming.
Yeah, it's like, girl, you ain't had no gun, no knife.
Better
no,
question
no knife
is,
flipper, nothing.
Why did Cookie it, like, get this space in this neighborhood? If like her brand is to be all about like we're like royalty and we have shit and we're like, of course you're gonna end up with people like trying to jack your shit. Like that was, you either get a smaller, you either, I mean, if you can't get the space you need in a nicer part of town, in a better part of town, then it seems to me like you just rent out space when you can. Like, I mean, it's not like they're dirt poor or anything.
My thing is like, or like, get some security. The dog, I mean, the dog
yeah,
helped.
Yeah, get some security at the door. That'd be nice.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, you need some security cameras. Yeah,
get Porsche back. Porsche would have helped.
Oh, yeah. Well, Porsche needs to be smart.
That dog. I don't know. No. When Porsche brought that dog in, man, that absolutely made my night. Whoopty whoop. What was that his name?
Yeah. So, like, but no, I would have been fine. But she's like the worst fucking assistant I've ever seen.
That was, by the like, way, I'm just gonna spoil it. That was my favorite scene when Porsche brings in Whoopty woo, yeah, and she's like, "This is the baddest bitch in town."
The dog worked, though. The
Who
dog
the
worked.
Hell names a dog Whoopty Whoop? That's what I mean.
Your grandma. I don't know. It was fucking ridiculous.
We could probably spend some time analyzing Porsche's character based on the fact she named the dog Whoopty Whoop.
Oh, God.
What's wrong with Fred or Spike or so? I don't know. Obviously. This episode was largely about the problematic, the first half anyway, was largely about the problematic nature of being a musician with a significant other. I just didn't care. I don't care about Jamal's boyfriend. I don't care about the like caricature of the dude who was like trying to give handies to everybody possible. Or blow him or whatever he was doing. Just like, please, anybody, please let me get you off. Like,
you know what killed me?
What's wrong with this guy?
I kind of found him kind of funny. Like, I don't. I just kept like laughing.
They say a
like,
mouth is a mouth. Like,
yes. Oh, I died when he said that. You know who plays him, right?
No. Who is that?
Adam Bush. From Buffy. Warren.
Oh, okay. Yeah, he's played a creep for a long time. He's got experience in that. Oh no, I did not recognize him, so that was good on him. I mean, nothing wrong with the actor. I just don't care about the character. I didn't care if Jamal took his boyfriend on the road or not. Like, this wasn't even about, like, you know, him. I always found the more interesting thing Jamal's, I guess, struggle to balance being like a hip-hop star with being openly homosexual. This wasn't even about that. This is just like, do you take the person you're dating with you on the road?
Yeah, on the road.
And okay, Neo didn't even care. He's like, do what you want.
Yeah, he really did. Like, can we just like do this fucking song?
Which, by the way, thank you, Empire, like, for having a musician who is playing a musician. Like, thank you. That was nice. Like, you didn't have him playing like a crazy security guard or you know, or like some sort of like tiny little thug in prison. I just want to know how Chris Rock's daughter ended up being bigger than he is. So that's impressive.
Oh, man.
Why is Thirsty hanging around still? Like, the case is over. Doesn't he have, like, more clients or a life or something? What is his function?
Probably don't. He probably ain't even a real fucking lawyer.
He might not be, because you remember last episode, like, when they showed up to, when the Fed showed up to Ray Lucius's house, he, like, completely made up some shit. He's like, according to Article 50, he's like, no, that's not true. He's like, oh, well, I'll try.
I was like, this dude ain't even a real lawyer, probably. He forged his documents like shit.
Okay, let's talk about Andre for a minute. All Andre wanted was to be back at Empire. Now he seems to be putting, he's been put at risk immediately, he put like what I'm saying is he puts that in at risk immediately. He puts his spot at Empire at risk as soon as he gets it by confessing to what he did to Jamal, for one thing, who is like second in command. And then if that's not enough, he wants, you know, to get baptized, which clearly pisses Lucius off. So, like, as soon as he gets his job back, which is all he wanted, he manages to both inform the second in command that he almost got him killed and then piss off the first in command. Like, does this really what he wants? Like, it doesn't seem like he has any idea what he wants.
I think Empire is, in a sense, all he, I won't say all he knows, but all he's has. And he doesn't want to throw all that away. He just wants to be the, you know, he just wants his dad to be proud of him. Like, daddy issues. Just like Jamal had, like, this season, he just wants his father's love. But he also is trying
and
to.
In a way, is he replacing his father's love with his capital letter F, father's love? Like, that seems to be. And I think in addition to Lucius just not liking religion and then having problems with his, you know, with bipolar memories with his mother, I think there's a part of it where Lucius is like, views himself as a god. He even called himself a god a couple episodes.
Yeah.
So, like, to see his son, as he put it, like, dunked in tap water and, like, praising another god was, I think that was a shot to Lucius's ego, his pride. I think that was part of it.
Yeah, it definitely is. It's like, you know, he said, you gotta obey my commandments. It's like, he views himself as a god at this point.
He does. And, you know, if you're an agnostic or an atheist, there is something to the idea that you create your own reality. And Lucius has taken what he had, which was nothing, and created this $1 billion, I suppose, I don't really know, but this huge, like, empire. And so, I mean, he has built something from nothing. Is that not what gods do?
That's true.
I don't know. I just thought Andre seems really confused as a character right now. I don't think he has any. I think he's just searching for answers. He thought Empire would make him happy. He got to Empire. It's not. He's still not happy. So now he's getting baptized and confessing his sins. Like he's an AA or something. I don't know.
He's an AA.
I mean, like, he has to go around apologizing for all the bad shit he's ever done. I've never heard of that as part of, like, a baptism ritual.
Yeah, I don't know. I got baptized when I was a baby, but I don't remember that shit.
I know, like, I live in the South. I know a lot of, like, Protestants who get baptized. They don't go around, like, apologizing for everything they've ever done first.
Yeah, like, AA. I was confused about that, too. I don't remember that.
I did think the theatricality of the baptism worked well, though, because everybody was together, and you could see Lucius, like, being disappointed in his son for choosing that tap water. and you could also, I was thinking also last week, Lucius, if you remember, Andre was talking about Bunky, and he didn't say it, but he was talking about Bunky like Bunky was a father, and, like, you can see it just did not sit well with Lucius. Like, Lucius was, I don't know if he was disappointed with himself or discussed it with Andre or what it was, but definitely made him unhappy.
Yeah, so, like, and I think it's really, a lot of this stuff is, I think it's starting to finally hit him, like, especially with, at least dealing with his children. Like, when the girl was rapping about her love for her father, his own kids probably wouldn't be able to do something like that because he realized, like, they don't have really love for him because the way he treats them, you know.
Maybe Hakeem will get some love for him after he rescues him. But let me say this. Even after, like, the Cookie-Hakeem split, okay, Cookie has gone to Lucius on multiple occasions and be like, uh-oh, shit happened, I need help. And he's been like, okay, I'll help you. And now, like, Hakeem needs help. And from the previews, he's going to be like, okay, I'll help you. And when Lucius needed help, he didn't go to Cookie and Hakeem. Like, so this is, in some sense, a one-sided relationship. Even though Lucius is seen as the bad guy, like, he's still the one that always has to fix shit when they get in trouble.
Thing I didn't understand, one thing is Cookie is not as smart as she's
really not. She thinks she's a lot smarter than she is.
Yeah, and the thing that I didn't understand, because what I thought she was going to do after Tiana got robbed, she said, I'm going to handle it. I thought she was going to go to Lucius, like, hey, can you, like, get these people off my back or something,
yeah,
like she did with...
that would be sensible.
What's it called?
Instead, they got looped. No, they didn't even get looped. They should have got looped.
But my thing is, like, now you should have handled it, because now your son is kidnapped, so you clearly didn't handle shit.
Yes, her answer was to, like, go get a gun.
Yeah.
Good job. You've answered the same. You apparently. You have a terrible. That's if your defense system is like untrained, like 50-year-old woman with a gun. Then I'm sorry, it's not the best. You have a favorite scene before we move on from this week.
I'll either say my favorite scene is the scene with Andre confessing his suicide attempt to Lucius.
Yeah.
Because I'd say that scene was probably my favorite scene, one of my favorite scenes of season one. It was done very well and it was very good.
It was a good scene.
That or the flashback scene and the juxtapose of Andre's baptism. And it really touched on, like, mental illness and, like, how, like, you know, you hear these news stories about, you know, these mothers with mental illness, you know, drowning their kids, or like I think it was one recently, one threw off their baby off the roof or something like that.
Yeah.
So it's really touching on, like, the mental illness and the effect it can have on their children and how dangerous it can be.
I think this episode worked a lot better for you than it did for me, and I'm going to say that because of your favorite scenes, and I think those were the scenes that the show wanted us to take away as, like, the most powerful scenes, and I do agree that the Andre scene was done pretty well. I'm almost getting tired of the Lucius flashback scenes. Like, I get it. At some point, it's like we're being reminded. I get it. He's traumatized with his experience with a mother who had, like, a mental disorder. Like, that shaped who he is today, and it shapes his relationship with Andre. I get it. You don't have to show me every week.
I think it's going to lead up to, like, showing, like, his how his mother died or something.
Or maybe we know she's dead. Maybe she's still around somewhere. My favorite scene, I already said it, my dog, Whoop-de-Whoop. He's the man. I guess it's a she. She's the baddest bitch in town. And I'm sticking with that. And we'll be back with Empire in 2 weeks, as next week they don't have an episode because of an archaic sport nobody cares about. And we are here to talk about The Leftovers. This week's episode was called Off Ramp. Ash, I was immediately struck by the fact that this episode reminded me a lot of some of the one-off episodes from last year where we tracked a character who wasn't in the main plot. Also, it reminded me a lot of last season, because while the first two episodes were, like, fresh and... Not that this was a bad episode in any way, but the first two episodes were fresh and had a different perspective and maybe had a little more uplifting, not necessarily uplifting, but less downtrodden, like, humanistic approach. We're back to, like, some straight, old-fashioned, leftovers, depressing shit. How did you feel about Offer Up?
I guess I kind of missed it, but at the same time...
You missed it! You're like, man, I miss these depressing motherfuckers.
They
didn't smoke enough in the first two episodes. Let me tell you, there was not enough smoking going on.
I love the first two episodes, because it gave us a whole different vibe and everything. I think, like I said, I missed it because it felt familiar, I guess I could say.
Mm. All right. Yeah, it did. And, it was good. It was a good episode of television. It was a really, really dark episode of television. Not just because, obviously, we went back to the Guilty Remnant, and we'll talk more about them. Like, the Guilty Remnant are some of the most disturbing people humanity has to offer. And they believe the world has ended, which is, by the way, more. We found out more in this episode about what the Guilty Remnant is than we did in all of last season combined. But I thought what was maybe most depressing was the end, where Lori and Tom decide that in order to get these people to not go back to their ways and to not, drive headfirst into oncoming traffic, they have to give them something. And the only thing they can think to give them to fill the spiritual void that they have is another lie. It's a lie of that Tom basically pilfers from Holy Wayne. But, they take their, so the ultimate message of the show seems to be, as far as religion is concerned, as far as spirituality is concerned, that you either believe one lie or you believe another. You either believe this bullshit or you believe that bullshit, but at the end of the day, it's still bullshit, which is a pretty depressing message.
Oh gosh, that scene was so disturbing. I think that, well,
Who wants a
that
hug? Do you want a hug, Ash? Do you want a hug?
no, I don't want a fucking
Yeah.
hug. That was just so scary, and I was freaking out when I was like, "No, they're not doing this. This is not okay."
Yeah, I can't tell. I eventually got into the episode. I can't tell you though, just in like that first 30 seconds, how bad my reaction was to seeing where we were. Because I was like, all right, are we with the Garveys? Are we with Kevin Carroll and his family? Oh fuck, this is where we are. These people again. What did you think about what has happened to Liv Tyler's Meg? Meg is a new person. She has a lot of power.
I was like, how the fuck did she rise up in the ranks so quickly? Like, she was just a newbie last season, but okay.
One thing I would suggest is I don't know if there are a lot of ranks. Like, it doesn't seem like that big of an organ. There are just like a like 50 or 60 of them from town to town. Like, I don't know if it's that and. I think there might have been a power vacuum in Mapleton after like everybody died last year. Like she might be the longest serving member in Mapleton at this point. Not to mention they're all like gotta be dying of lung cancer by now.
Oh my gosh. Can't fucking
I did appreciate that every time like Tom went to a new group or whatever, you could hear the wheezing in the background. Like there are people like pathetically coughing. I'm like, yep. Like I used to smoke, but my God, I never smoked like that. It's just
Yeah,
absurd.
that'll get that far. I don't understand why that's a thing though. Like they join the group and suddenly you're a chain smoker? I don't get the
Okay,
connection.
I think I do. I think I'll try to explain. I said I think I understood more this week than I did before because Lori is in the book meet in the meeting with the editors. And she says they believe the world has already ended. Like this is a show a lot mostly about how life goes on or how you try to make life go on when it seems like the world has ended. They actually believe that this thing that happened that we've talked about that is scientifically inexplicable and religiously inexplicable is the end of the world. And so the only way they can combat it is to like shut off reality. And that includes with the smoking, saying, "Oh, you tell me this thing is bad for me and will kill me. Watch me do it because the world's already over. Who cares if I die?" I mean, that's the only explanation I can give because I don't. Other than that, I mean, the whole first season I was confused by it. I'm not saying I perfectly understand it now, but at least I think I have a little insight into it. I watched all last year, just like, damn. Somebody get these people some nicotine. And Lori did, and Lori got them some nicotine. What about I think the use of music is excellent. The Where Is My Mind piano cover that I played to lead into us that was played over Lori losing her mind after last week's Pixies version of the song for Kevin. That was amazing. I was sort of iffy on it last week because I thought it seemed on the nose, but putting it into context with this week, this is just and the way that was juxtaposed with like the rhythmic drums that kept playing as Lori went crazy and like ran people over. Can we talk about how violent people are with vehicles in this episode, though?
That's like, we're just gonna just hit
Well, I mean,
people.
she I think she said something at one point, like they just won't get out of the way. I mean, and it's a fair point. That's the problem with the Guilty Remnant. It's why people hate them so much, or why they hated them so much in Maplewood. They won't get out of the way. Like, just.
I get that. I would have probably hit them with my car a long time ago. And like just hid the body in the woods and some shit.
Now, that's gotta be like one of the best things about living in Jardin is in Texas where the Garveys are now, is there are no guilty remnant. These haunted people.
You're not there.
Okay, so this season one was based entirely on The Leftovers book by Tom Perata. This is basically a sequel. This is like entirely new material. Taking that into light, how do you feel about season two as a sequel to season one so far?
I like it because it's pretty much like it's tying into the first one on the first season, but also feel like it's its own story as well. So it's definitely tied to the first season, but it's moving on. It's not stuck in where just keeping on with the same thing that season one had.
I like some of the. I agree with you. I don't really have anything to add. I agree with everything you just said. I one other thing I like some of the extended no dialogue scenes this episode. Lori, especially with Lori, like it can be uncomfortable to watch, like when no one speaks on TV for prolonged periods of time. But I think that's the point. Like life is uncomfortable
It's
sometimes.
very effective.
And I really like to see where Lori broke into the house to steal her laptop back. Like, so the kid, can you imagine being that kid and you're just like, oh, I got a new laptop. And some woman, like, comes up from behind you in your room and grabs it and runs.
I was like, what am I watching? What's going on? They just like runs out with the last time trying to get to the car. I was confused, like, why does she have her son like in the driver's seat as a getaway driver? So you gotta worry about trying to like start the car.
Well, I don't know if she'd want her son to know she was doing that, though. I think she's trying to put off like a certain image, and I think that's why she went nuts in the book deal because she was basically getting a literary analysis of the show being told to a character on the show, which is first of all really interesting, and like she was being told a literary analysis of her own life, and all of what he said rings true, and Lori can't handle the truth. And she snaps, and in a very interesting scene, she like flies across the table and attacks. Like that book was so important to her too. Like she was willing to break into somebody's house and steal her laptop to get that book back, and she just threw it away, man. She just threw it away.
That guy was no. That dude had it coming though. He was being very insensitive and
He was being
douchey.
insensitive, but he was analyzing the book as a book. And it is her life, but he was just analyzing it like it's a book. And like, if you can't
Sir,
take people doing that, I'm gonna say you probably shouldn't write about it and put it out to the public.
it was just like the certain things he was saying. I was like, really? Like, do you have to say? He could have said it in a different
He could
way.
have, but I still think if you don't want people saying like bad things about your life, you probably shouldn't write about your life for public consumption. I mean,
True. I still wouldn't do that. At least slash his tires after I got the deal or some shit.
yeah, I mean that would at least, I mean that's fine. I thought, and one more scene I wanted to talk about, one other thing that happened before we get to favorite scenes or anything. There's this really amazing scene in the support group or piece of dialogue more than scene, where this one lady says the stuff people care about seems so stupid sometimes, and Lori says, what do you care about? And I thought that was perfect because what it was really suggesting is that sometimes in the wake of tragedy, caring about anything feels stupid because it either seems trite, like it's some unimportant
Yeah.
bullshit, or it seems or it's something that you're gonna lose because you just lost something. So, I think maybe that's one of the key questions to the show now that it's told us like all religion is bullshit.
Yeah.
What do you care about and why is it worth caring about? Do you have anything before we go to favorite scenes? Do you have anything else on The Leftovers Season 2, Episode 3 off ramp?
That creepy rape scene.
Yeah, that's my favorite scene, but you go ahead and talk about it
Oh
first.
God, I was like, why? Why are you doing this? What the fuck? Oh my gosh, it was disturbing.
I thought it was great because not that it was fun to watch or anything. It was definitely
Yeah,
disturbing.
but yeah,
But
it was done.
the rape and the whole threat scene that led through it, I thought it was the most expertly filmed and executed scene of the night. It reintroduced Meg. Nice
Yeah.
to see you're still around, Steven Tyler's daughter. It
Sorry.
showed the day like the inherent danger of Tom's life. Like what he's doing seems all like fun and games and cool and being undercover, but then like this is what could happen. And the guilty remnant seems to be so showing him, like, we can do anything we want to you. We can rape you. We
Yeah.
can murder you. We can do anything we want to you. Don't fuck with us. It is a very implicit threat. And it also is like at the halfway point of the episode, and like things have been going fairly reasonably well for Tom and Lori up to that point, and it like set up the shift to like everything's going to shit now.
Yeah. Yeah, and I feel like the Guilty Remnant feel far more threatening this season than last season. Last season they was kind of just
Yeah, it's like a full
there,
blown
and it
cult and almost like a mob structure with the way they have,
Yeah,
people that answer to people.
I wonder if Meg had any influence, because whoever's in charge probably has whoever's in charge, their vibe probably like shifts the vibe throughout the whole cult. So I wonder if, this is Meg's influence. I wonder if it actually did change, or was it always like this? I think some of it was
Well,
based on
that's a good
first.
question. I think maybe Patty, the ghost, will be able to answer it
Yeah, I missed her.
for
I
us.
think that's why because like I hate the Guilty Remnant more now. Well, they're terrible people, but I think I miss Patty.
Patty is great, and I'm glad they found a way to keep Ann Dowd around.
Yeah.
I'm interested to see next week, and it seems like next week might be a little bit of the Garveys and the new family whose last name I don't remember, and maybe even a little Tom. Maybe we'll get all the characters in an episode for once, and that'll be interesting.
Yeah.
Come back next week. Up next, we're going to talk for just a few minutes about Fargo. All right, John and Ash here to talk about Fargo this week, Before the Law. Ash, what did you think about Before the Law?
I liked it. I'm liking the family dynamics and the new characters that is being pushed in.
Bokeem Woodbine is so good. I didn't even know that dude's name before this
Yeah,
episode. That guy was so good.
I love it. It's because I've seen the actor before, like in other stuff I couldn't think of,
Yeah, I
but
had seen him before, but I didn't know who he was. Like, I didn't know
yeah.
his name. I had to look him up. He was just like alive on camera. That was my big, like, out of all, like, there are a lot of good actors on the show, and there are a lot of
Yeah.
really, really good things about this show. My favorite thing about episode two is just like Bokeem Woodbine was menacing and alive and cool, and just like he didn't, it wasn't in what he said or what he did. It was just in how he in the actor and the way he portrayed it.
Yeah, he was certainly a scene stealer. Shit, I can't even talk. Scene
Yeah,
stealer. There
I love the scene, the dry sense of humor Fargo has, we've talked about before. We're still stuck on the shoes, and he's like, "What size shoes do you fellas wear?" That is truly an odd question. Because can you imagine if a cop pulled you over and he's like, "What size shoes do you wear?" He's like, "What the fuck?"
Well, I'm about to get jacked for my shoes.
And also the other scene that with where they cut off the guy's ears and he's like, "Ass, guess did you not hear me?" And they're like, "Oh, we cut his ears off. They're, wake him up. We think he's dead." Like, that's some really dark shit, but Fargo does it really well. Something else I think Fargo does well is really blends like that folksy upbeat music sometimes with the snowy exteriors and like the meat market, and it did it both in the opening scene and in the scene in the same time and in the scene where he's washing off the car, where the husband is cleaning the
Cleaning up.
car, and we got like that weird folksy upbeat like 1950s music or something. Also, that same juxtaposition exists in the diner scene where the child is playing in the snow outside. And by the way, I know you don't know this, that child is actually like one of the main characters from season one, so it's a little callback for people who watched it. But the bloody crime scene inside, and to take it one step further, the crime scene infiltrates like the little play scene outside in the same way that evil is like infiltrating the town in the form of organized crime because there's like a gun out there in her little play scene. Yeah.
I noticed that too. I thought it was really done really well.
Yeah, and that is a clear visual, message to the audience that like these things, this may look like a sweet, nice, innocent place, but there is danger here.
I love how his mom picked up the gun. He was like fingerprints, he's not touching the barrel.
Yeah. I like how the camera is always active and exploring things. Unlike a lot of TV that's very, very plot based. Like sometimes we focus on things that have nothing to do with the script. Like when we have a lot of split screens. We have those really cool flashback cuts to give us Jesse Plemons and Kirsten Dunst PTSD. Like it's just like a split second flashback. And we're going to talk about an episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer in a few minutes. Let's just say the PTSD is conveyed a lot more subtly and better in Fargo than it was in Buffy. But yeah, and like what I mean, the camera will focus. Like the camera will focus. Like when we were walking into a building, the camera might focus on like characters on the side having a conversation, or like the doors up ahead and not on the characters walking. And it's just really interesting. What do you think about the big company moving in on the family business?
I'm actually interested to see where that's gonna go. I already know it's gonna be like bloodshed going on in
Yeah.
that. But that's something that like happens a lot, corporate, as they say, tries to move in on family business to make,
It's just usually not like a family mafia business.
Yeah,
That's what's.
true. Yeah, that's different. Usually like a family bakery or some
Yeah,
shit.
fucking Walmart. I think that it's significant that it takes place in 1979 because the idea is that conservatism and Ronald Reagan's like pro-business attitude created a climate where being bigger is better as a business by lowering taxes on the wealthy and lessening restrictions on monopolies. And like I think there is a connection between the setting and the time. And the idea that like this big business is gonna come take over the little family business. That I might be reading too much into that, but I don't know why else Ronald Reagan is being like mentioned in episode one. One of the coolest scenes was Kirsten Dunst and her lesbian buddy. Isn't she a lesbian? Am I misreading that?
No, I'm pretty sure she is. Like, I caught that with, like, in that first scene at the salon and everything. When she was just looking at her up and down, I was like, oh shit. And then when she came to the house, I was like, oh shit.
Why steal the toilet paper though? Is she just a thrill seeker? Is that what she
I don't.
was? Why would you steal toilet paper? Maybe that's why she ran over Rye and started all this shit. Maybe she was just looking for like a thrill. But the word "we" is a castle with a moat and a drawbridge. And you know what gets locked up in castles?
Castles
Yeah,
and dragons.
princesses. Yeah, dragons. That was one of my favorite lines, though. I'm a little biased, just my own personal life. I was like, God, that's so true. I like the simplicity of the scene. though, and it helped us understand where Kirsten Dunst's character is in her life. And maybe this is why she doesn't ever want to have sex with Jesse Plemons. Maybe it's not because of his dad bod. Maybe she's into chicks.
Well, maybe. I
That.
think there's gonna be a lot more to her character, though. I give
Yeah.
them that.
Yeah, I think if you look on like the website, she's actually got top billing. So I feel like we
Yeah,
will get
yeah,
we
yeah.
man I, we will probably get a lot more of her. Back to Bokeem Woodbine for a minute. I thought one of the things he conveyed really well in his presence is that evil is real in Fargo, but it's hiding in plain sight. One of the great
Yeah.
things is that it's presenting itself plainly, but it doesn't look that much different than anything else. On the surface, that traffic stop was just a traffic stop.
Yeah.
But the way he talked about people communicating calmly and rationally,
Yeah.
like, you could just tell that is a menacing motherfucker. Like, he is saying very nice and polite things in an ostensibly nice
Yeah.
way, but he is really meaning, like, I'm going to kill you if you don't fuck off.
And what he was saying was true, 'cause that could have ended badly. But he, like, the presence that he gave, it was just like so calm. Like he didn't have any true problems in the world. Like he feared nothing. Yeah, he fears nothing.
And he is, you won't know, Billy Bob Thornton played a character in season one that was sort similar to Bokeem. I think these are different characters. I don't think it's a retread, but similar in that same, like, foreboding evil nonchalantness. There was also, you ever saw the movie? There's a famous scene from the movie. Or there's a meat grinder that's like chop. Or sorry, that there's a wood chipper that's chopping up a body,
Yeah.
and you might have seen that before. And I think that's like obviously they were paying homage to the film with the
Yeah.
meat grinder scene, and that was such a good use of suspense that the one
Yeah.
finger on the floor, and like that's all you needed. Like in those few minutes, they told a story where we were like, oh shit, is he gonna see the finger,
Yeah.
and what could happen from there. And that's all they needed to do. It's so simple and it was so effective, and I thought it was great. What do you think about the alien idea this season? Do you know what I'm do like aliens seem to exist in Fargo season 2 or something. Okay, here's what I'm basing that on. There was a big neon light last week and we talked about it. And we were like, "What the fuck is that?" And like some people online said it was a UFO, right? I wasn't fully buying that. But then this episode ended with the broadcast from the War of the Worlds, which is about an alien
Yeah.
invasion. Which, I mean, I guess the invasion angle is like similar to the business taking over, but that's the one thing about this outstanding first two episodes of this season where I'm just like, what?
What?
Aliens?
Yeah. I don't know. I think it's gonna be it's trying to make us and the characters to think one thing, but it's gonna be something, completely, explained, very simply. So I don't think they're actually gonna go with the alien thing. Yeah, I think
I
it's
will
just gonna
tell you
be.
this. I did a little personal research, and I'm sure I'm not the only person that found this. In 1979, in Minnesota, a deputy sheriff called in what he called a UFO sighting, and this is obviously said in 1979 in Minnesota.
Yeah.
So I mean, I don't know if those two things are related at all, but
It probably is. It
yeah.
probably is. But question is, like, is it really a UFO? I guess that's the
Yeah.
question.
Well, I mean, it is
Or
a
is it just.
UFO because it's unidentified, but is it really like an alien? I don't know.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite scene?
I have to say my favorite scene was the scene with the mom and the older son, the sit down. Which she pretty much told him, was like, dude, you cannot handle this job right now.
Yeah, that was
So,
a
and
really good
like,
scene, and I'd forgotten about that.
yeah, and I think probably my favorite part of the scene was when she told him to sit down, and he was coming to pull the chair out for her so he could sit in his father's seat, but the mom just sat in the dad's seat, so he was like, fuck, now I gotta sit on the other end of the table. Oh, she just played the shit out of you. Like, you can't, like, I'm liking the mom, and
Yeah, I
I'm
like the
like,
mom
dude,
too.
you
And
can't
I
do that.
misspoke about something last week. I thought the father was dead. I think we both
Yeah.
did. He's apparently not dead. That's our bad.
He probably just like had a stroke or
Had
something.
a
I don't know.
stroke and is like in paralysis or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah, the mom's little power play was great, especially in the sense that she doesn't seem that it's about power. She was like, "I'm doing this because I'm the only one who can do this."
Yeah. She said, after, all this crisis is over, then I'll worry about, turn to my grave or something like that.
Yeah.
It was like she's not caring about this power. She just wants to keep the family.
Yeah, we talk about Cookie a lot from Empire. She is like the anti-Cookie. She's not like
Yeah.
trying to overthrow a power have a power struggle or like lead some kind of like personal revolution or radio. She's just, this is what
It's
needs
not
to be
about her.
done, and I'm gonna do it because it's for the good of the business, of the family business. My favorite scene was the Bokeem Woodbine being pulled over by Ted Danson scene. That is truly an odd question.
Yeah. Yeah, that was such a good scene.
Yeah. All right. Go ahead. We have a few moments. Ash, tell us what you want to tell us about. All right, about your soapbox segment. What do you want to tell us about the Walking Dead?
I actually enjoyed the first two episodes. Although there was something in the second episode that I wasn't really enjoying, I am about to upload a video of my thoughts about it, but I'm just going to keep it brief.
Yeah, get your shit in. Tell people where they can find your video.
Oh, yeah. I should have wrote this down. YouTube.com/user/Ashley924, I think. 0924, I believe. And that's Ashley with two E's. But there's a character named Carol, and those who watch it know that, she came from, like, the bottom because she was an abused housewife. She lost a daughter. She went through all the struggles. But now she's, like, this, super badass. But the only thing that bothers me is that it's kind of like when she does these badass things or something like that, it's like, kind of remind me of, how John Cena becomes Super Cena?
Yeah.
That's it. And that's what it feels like. It's like, okay, can we not? This is like just too much. Like, dial it back a little bit, can we? And I feel like last episode could have went to another character who hasn't had as much screen time or a great storyline in like seasons. And the way they're building this character up, I think she could have used that episode. But there's a giant herd of probably like 800 to 1,000 walkers heading towards the
What,
community.
White
So
Walkers? Because I might be in. Are they White
no, not my
Walkers?
fault. No.
Damn it. I might have watched White Walkers.
But yeah, I'm ready for that to play out because it's going to get really. I'm pretty sure there's quite a few people going to die from that.
That scene, I don't know. I'm definitely not, don't have the base of knowledge of Walking Dead you do, but like some people are going to die usually seems like a safe bet for that show.
Yeah.
That in fact should be their motto, The Walking Dead, some people are gonna die.
Gonna die. Pretty much.
I'm not gonna talk about any TV for a minute because to be honest, other than the shows we cover on here, I'm about a week behind still on everything. I'm on last week, but I want to take a minute to talk about something I just realized, and I've always known it, but I just realized the extent of it. So I'm going back and listening to some old Outkast albums the other day, some Outkast, and I admittedly like a pretty big Andre stan because I mean, who isn't? Why wouldn't you be? But I always thought. I always realized that Andre was better than Big Boy. But listening to some of their older stuff especially, I'm just like, why did one of the most talented MCs who's ever lived, like, have a duo for so long with like this completely average like yeah. And the wildest thing is if you go back and listen to the early stuff, often Andre is like talking about the struggle and talking about perceptions of race and like these really important issues, and then Big Boy just comes out and spits some stuff about hoes sucking dick, and I'm like, they're not even doing the same thing at all. Why is Andre with this guy? Ugh.
Oh, yeah. Not even on the same page. That's two different books right there.
It really is. And then like they of course they finally release their dual album. And I can't name
Yeah.
one song off of Big Boy's album.
Big boy.
And of course, Andre's album produces like the most significant like pop hip hop song of like the last 20 years. And hey, so like I'm just gonna go out on record and say like Andre might have made a career mistake when he was like, "Yo, let's get together and have a duo."
Well, they was popular. Outkast was popular.
Outkast
They
was
sold
popular, but they're
music, so.
popular because of Andre. Nobody likes Big Boy. What's he there for?
Oh, man, that's funny.
All right. We will be back next week and I'll try to talk about television and not music. Guys, like, comment, subscribe. Check out our other pod we do. It's called Your Childhood Trauma. It's about Buffy the Vampire Slayer. This week's episode is gonna get intense. We're gonna talk about how Ash doesn't love Buffy enough.
Oh, yeah, stop.
That's the action you're missing out on right there. All right, guys, thank you so much for listening. Let us know what you think. Let us know if you want us to cover anything next week in the stead of the shows we'll be missing. Leave us a comment. I'm John.
And I'm Ash.
And we're out.